the truth about federal telework. Learn what you and your agency need to know at the Telework Center at federalnewsradio.com, keyword telework. Sponsored by Tanberg, now a part of Cisco.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Covey. Delighted to have you with us. We're going to be talking about a subject that is near and dear and fearful to the hearts of many people in the U.S., and that is Social Security, where it's going, what state it's in now, what's likely to happen to it. And my guest this morning is Nancy Altman. She is chairman and CEO of the board of so many organizations. Nancy, I'll let you introduce yourself if you will.
Thank you. Mike, I am the author of a book called The Battle for Social Security, From FDR's Vision to Bush's Gamble. I am currently co-director of an organization called Social Security Works, and I am co-chairing a coalition and campaign called Strengthen Social Security, Don't Cut It, which includes 125 organizations representing 50 million Americans, including AFSCME and a number of organizations that represent federal workers.
Well, and you also worked for Alan Greenspan, did you not?
I did. I was his top aide during the so-called Greenspan Commission that developed the proposal that went through Congress in 1983 and has kept Social Security paying benefits in full and on time through today and well in for several decades more to come.
Well, Social Security is known as in politics as the third rail of American politics, and that is if you touch it, you die. And I once worked for a radio station, and we were told never even to say the words Social Security, literally because the telephone switchboard would light up. People would hear Social Security, and they usually heard or thought they heard something bad about it. An explanation of what Social Security is, it started in the 1930s, and it was a very different concept than it is now. And we got, I think I sent you some of our reader and listener comments to today's show, because we plug it in today's column. And one woman pointed out that when Social Security was set up, the retirement age was usually after the normal death age for the typical American.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. There's a lot in what you just said that mm-hmm. I'd like to react to. First of all, there's a good reason that it is called the third rail, and that is because it is so successful, so important, and so much a fabric of this country. It was actually back when I was working for Greenspan that it was Tip O'Neill, the Speaker of the House and strong champion of Social Security, who made that quip about it being the third rail, touch it and you die, he said. But what he meant was he was a strong defender and he talked about Social Security all the time. He was not saying don't talk about it. He was saying don't hurt it. Don't do anything. It was a kind of dirty, hairy, make my day.
Right.
It was a challenge to the Republicans and opponents of Social Security. You just try to go after it and you'll be dead politically. The Social Security actually is very much the way it was back then and is, and will, I hope, remain that way well into the future. It's sometimes people talk about the need to modernize it. Social Security is thoroughly modern in its concept. The idea is that as long as workers are dependent on wages, they need wage insurance in case they lose those wages, and that's what Social Security is. You can suffer a disabling illness or accident, and your wages are gone and need to be replaced, and Social Security since 1956 has provided wage insurance. You can die and have young children and you need life insurance. Social Security since 1939 has provided survivor's insurance, or what we today call life insurance. And if you grow old and can't keep working, you need a joint and survivor annuity, an old age annuity. And since 1935, Social Security has provided that. And if I can just say one thing, because this is so misunderstood about life expectancies. The life expectancy was, 57 or 58. Although it's technically accurate, the reason it was so low was that in that waiting were childhood illnesses. It used to be that children died from smallpox and measles and mumps, and some of these illnesses that before we had antibiotics were threatening to many children. If people lived to 21, they usually lived till 65. So the appropriate longevity is what happened to people when they were 65. Men who lived to 65 in 1940 on average lived another 12.7 years. Women lived another 14.7 years. So they lived well into their 70s. And today, the life expectancy is longer, but only about 5 years longer. And we have increased the retirement age 2 years. So it is actuaries back in 1934 and 1935, as they were designing this system, projected forward. They understood that people were going to live longer, and Congress has always made allowance for that. So that is not unexpected, and it's not unaffordable, and it's not a problem.
Okay, so while that's an accurate figure at the time, you're saying it's an apples and oranges thing, and I guess this is one of the reasons that women now outlive men, which is never true historically before, was deaths in childbirth. And once that became a much smaller factor, then suddenly women moved way ahead of us.
That's right. Women have generally longer life expectancies, although it's, I think, with all the stress and so forth, women are sort of closing, you men are closing the gap.
We'll give you equality yet. Actually, let me read an email that I got from Linda in Montana, and she was commenting on today's column. And she said, if Social Security was kept as it was intended, a supplement to retirement, and that money was indeed in a trust and not touched, there would be plenty of money. If you look at the history of Social Security, when it started, you collected at age 62. The average life expectancy at that time was about 58. Don't quote me on that. So most people did not live to collect. So you just answered that part of it. Instead of increasing the collection age with the increase in life expectancy, it was left the same for the most part, and more people collected. People seem to think that Social Security is their only retirement and didn't save, and so think they should get more than they do. I don't recall if Social Security disability was part of the original or it was added later, as it benefits children who died later. You dealt with that, but she says here the fund has been raided over the years by Congress to pay bills instead of being left alone to earn interest. The only good thing is if you don't pay in, for example, people who avoid or lie in the tax system their whole life collect little or nothing. But then again, if they spend it all, they just end up on welfare. What do you think about that?
That again, there's a lot of rich material and interesting points that Linda makes. Social Security, actually, the funds, it is the most fiscally responsible part of the federal budget. It is very conservatively managed. It has its funds kept in trust. It has. Almost since the beginning. There was a constitutional question in 1935, but as soon as that got resolved, 1939, the Old Age Survivors Insurance Trust Fund was set up. It's headed by a board of trustees like every other trust. The beneficial owners of that trust are the American people. Whenever Social Security's income primarily comes from mandatory contributions of workers matched by their employers, and that money is normally, most of it is, it's current funded, so most of it is paid out in benefits, but whenever it has a surplus, that surplus is kept in reserve and invested. And since 1983, part of what the Greenspan Commission recommended and Congress went for was to have the contributions in the 1990s higher than was really needed for current benefits in order to advance fund the baby boom retirement. So baby boomers paid a little bit more, and because there are so many of us. Currently today, and most of your listeners may not realize this, Social Security has an accumulated reserve, accumulated surplus of $2.5 trillion. That's a with a T, and that's a surplus, not a deficit. People aren't used to the federal government, any part of the federal government, having a surplus, but this one has a $2.5 trillion surplus. It's still, despite news reports to the contrary, if you look at all its income, it is still running a surplus, and will continue to do so till about 2024, when it will have a $4.2 trillion surplus. Now, what happens with that money? It's like anything else. If you put your money in the bank doesn't just put it under a mattress and invest it. Or if Verizon sets up a pension fund, it doesn't just put the contributions under a mattress, those funds get invested by the trustees. That's what happens with Social Security. Because this is the these are money that belong to workers and their families, the investments are in the safest, most cautious investment on earth, and that is interest-bearing treasury bonds. So there are about several dozen civil servants at Treasury and Social Security Administration keeping daily track of the interest earned by the trust funds and making sure that money is paid. These are backed by the full faith and credit of the United States.
I believe that's the same investment that the Thrift Savings Plan uses for its G fund, that it's only available in the Thrift Savings Plan and to Social Security.
That's exactly right, and it's also a number of unemployment insurance funds are invested that way, and individuals and pension funds and countries around the world. I mean, today, money is flocking into our treasury bills because of the uncertainty of the worldwide economy.
Two questions out of that. One is, did Lyndon Johnson, President Lyndon Johnson, do something with Social Security, borrow from it or take funds from it or something?
Yes, and what he did, past Congresses and certainly those that created the program, but there've been much effort to keep Social Security segregated and apart from the general fund. Unlike the general fund, of course, has run deficits almost every year for the last half century. Social Security, by law, has no borrowing authority and can only pay benefits if it has sufficient income on hand. That's part of it being so conservative. And to make sure that it always has that income, it makes these annual trustees reports to Congress projecting out three-quarters of a century into the future. Another way that it was kept, tried to kept separate and apart, was that it was always kept off budget. It was reported separately. Lyndon Johnson, part of it, you know, a group of experts, of economists said, well, let's look at the unified budget and propose that it be reported as part of the rest of the budget. Lyndon Johnson, I think, you know, I can't prove this, but I feel pretty confident, decided that was a good idea because it masked the cost of the Vietnam
right.
War. So he did start doing that. And it was soon after that when David Stockman, President Reagan's OMB director, and even President Carter started talking about Social Security in terms very different from the way it was meant to be talked about and the way the American people think about it, which is a fund that does not belong to the government. It belongs to the workers who contribute to it. It's insurance, and it is payable to them for those benefits.
Yes, let me ask you a couple more things.
Sure.
We need to take a short break here, and we'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
What will happen to your hard-earned wealth after you die? How do you protect your assets for your family? Will your heirs squander it away? Will creditors and predators try to take it away from your loved ones? At Zelle Law, our goal is to give you peace of mind in planning for your retirement and beyond by helping you construct the best life and estate plans customized to your needs. Find out what you need to know on Blueprint for Wealth. Join me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
IT professionals and graduates from around the country have a lot to say about their experiences from the online Masters in Information Systems from UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Project management principles, now I have a lot more understanding. That is also something that I have been able to bring to the table.
Apply today for our upcoming semester. For more information, call 1-800-353-UMBC or visit us online at onlinems.umbc.edu.
Are you a government contractor using QuickBooks? Do you need help resolving issues with DCAA? The Federal Contractor Services Network provides accounting solutions for government contractors who use QuickBooks. In their workshops, you'll configure your QuickBooks file to pass DCAA accounting system review. Their software application, ICAT, enables QuickBooks users to compute indirect rates and generate reports needed for DCAA compliance. For more information, please visit FCServicesNetwork.com. That's FCServicesNetwork.com.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
The Government Printing Office is making some final preparations for a full launch of its FDSIS program. Mike Wash is GPO's Chief Information Officer, and he describes what needs to happen.
Once we're comfortable that everything is in there and we have a robust and reliable and backed up system with the failover, we'll be confident to say this system, which everybody's been using now for over a year, is our system of record.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorbeck Insider this afternoon. Secrecy. How's the government doing with secrets? The annual secrecy report card compiled by OpenTheGovernment.org. It's just out. We'll see how you scored. And Gov 2.0 and Open Government. Is there a relationship between these two topics? Analysis from Alex Howard of O'Reilly Media this afternoon. After Washington Nationals baseball on the Dorbeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to your turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us today. I'm talking with Nancy Altman. She is you certainly could say she is an expert on Social Security, runs a number of groups or sits on the board of groups that are out there to preserve and protect Social Security, keep it from being cut. And also she wanted to set the record straight on a number of things she says are myths about Social Security. And Nancy, you, a couple things. One, you mentioned before the break that the Social Security is it's got money locked in the box now. It has $2.5 trillion dollars, and it is in good shape. And then I think you said in a few years it will have $4.2 trillion locked up.
That's right. Now, it is true that if you project out, as the trustees do every year, project out three quarters of a century, there is a manageable shortfall that's been projected. It is, though quite manageable in size, there are many ways to close that gap. The latest trustees report, which came out August 5th, said that all benefits can be paid in full and on time without any action by Congress at all through 2037, and after that can pay at least 75 cents on every dollar. Now, that's not good enough, of course. We want to pay 100% on the dollar, and Congress has always made sure that those benefits could be paid in full and on time, most recently in 1983. You mentioned I worked for Alan Greenspan on the 1982 commission. So there is a shortfall that should be considered outside the deficit, and my strong view and the view of our coalition is that it should be closed with, there should be no increase in retirement age, including other benefit cuts, because what raising the retirement age is simply an across-the-board benefit cut. No other benefit cuts. That its manageable shortfall should be closed by making those who can afford to pay somewhat more do so.
So you would means test it then?
No. Social Security is insurance, and it, the idea of it is universal. So that if Microsoft had a, I don't know if it does, but if it has a private pension plan that Bill Gates is part of, and he's been working hard and contributing to that plan, no one would say, well, he doesn't need the money, let's not give it to him. The same thing is true of Social Security. If you've got, if you, those beneficiaries and workers and their families have earned those benefits, and they are entitled to them, and they should get them. It should not be means-tested. It is insurance, not welfare, and so we don't look at, in fact, we encourage people to save on top of it. We are not trying to, and means testing it would really change the fundamental nature of the program.
So the idea, I guess, then, is to raise the dollar limit on the amount of contributions that are taken out for Social Security. I mean, now is it $104,000 a year? That some
close $106,800.
Okay, so once you make over $106,800, you no longer pay into Social Security. You continue to pay Medicare, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so and so one way to do this would be to raise it to $200,000 or some other figure that would bring in more revenue from people who can certainly afford it.
Well, let me give you my actually part of my favorite proposal, which mm-hmm. and let me be very clear. I'm speaking here as an individual and an expert, not in any of these organizational hats, because they have not taken position on how the shortfall should be closed. But you're exactly right. Historically, the idea of that cap is that it's that level of wages and only those wages that are insured against loss. So that's the amount on which contributions are assessed. But historically, 90% of all wages and covered employment were covered and insured for Social Security purposes. So if you lift the cap completely on employers, as Jimmy Carter proposed, and as is done with hospital insurance, they're actually for both employers and employees there, but just on employers, and simply had those who earn over $106,800 have one additional week of withholding each year. In other words, most workers who earn under that threshold, and they have contributions for Social Security taken out every payday all year long. But if you're earning, say, twice that amount, you may only have withholding until about June, and then your take-home pay goes up and the withholding stops. If you have simply one additional week of withholding, which at most in 2010 would have been about $130, and you take the threshold off totally for employers, those employees paying that extra amount will get higher benefits as a result, and the projected shortfall will have three-quarters of it eliminated.
Push it back. Nancy, we need to take a short break here,
sure.
But we'll be right back talking about the mysteries of Social Security here on WFED 1500 AM.
Of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday mornings at 10, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
As government and commercial companies continue to improve their business processes, they're finding that IT requirement analysis, market reviews, product selection, and ongoing operations are taxing the resource base of their employees. TMR is here to help. TMR provides enterprise architecture, governance, and IT operational support to ensure our customers' IT investments are aligned with specific business goals, objectives, and capital investment strategies. For more details, visit TMR at tmrhq.com or call 703-323-1700.
The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
Okay, people, let's settle in. We've got a lot of slides to get through on our server utilization strategy. Okay, now this is an interesting
slide. Well, you've been here before. Somewhere in your agency, someone came up with a plan for data center efficiency.
Well, if you look here at the third bullet point, this is...
Actually, what they came up with is a presentation deck. You know, with underlined sections, bullet points, few animations, and sound effects. What's missing, of course, is how the job will actually get done. Because when the federal CIO says data center efficiency is a top priority, you need more than a slideshow. You need results. That's where Dell Services comes in. We've got over 30 years of experience delivering comprehensive best-in-breed solutions. Whether that's virtualization, cloud computing, or business continuity, we're ready to listen, and we're ready to help you deliver. To learn more, go to dell.com/deliver now.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion-resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Openly exchange ideas and develop solutions for today's toughest technology challenges at the 20th Annual Executive Leadership Conference, October 24th through the 26th in Williamsburg, Virginia. ELC offers a government-driven, educational, and neutral forum where government and industry IT executives can contribute to actionable solutions in healthcare, sustainability, cybersecurity, and accountability. Register today at actgov.org/ELC2010. ELC, advancing the business of government.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Nancy Altman. She is an authority on Social Security, and we're talking about the current debate. Nancy, we can't depart with this without referring to former Senator Alan Simpson of Wyoming, and he's been a frequent critic of Social Security, and recently, in an email to someone who was protesting it, he referred to Social Security as a cow with 310 million outlets, faucets, if you will. Except he didn't say faucet, right? But it got people's attention, which may have been the purpose of it. You said earlier that Social Security right now is not only fiscally sound, it has, you know, trillions of dollars in the bank, and that there are ways to fix it. Where is this anger at Social Security coming from?
Well, let me say also that that Alan Simpson is not simply a former senator. He is co-chair of the Deficit Commission.
Exactly.
That you mentioned. So he's got quite a bit of authority over this program. If he's able to come up with a proposal and get 14 out of 18 of his fellow members of that commission. Harry Reid is already, it will come up in the Senate in the lame duck. A lot of the hostility from Social Security, but there's a lot of things going on. My book is called The Battle for Social Security because in every generation there have been those who have been ideologically opposed to the concept of the government supplementing as one of your email correspondent said, and I think that's the right word for it, supplementing people's retirement or providing a foundation for their retirement for the middle class. They thought, you know, they think government should be limited only to defense, perhaps welfare, although many think that should be state and local if it's provided by government at all.
It's sort of a libertarian philosophy.
Exactly,
huh?
And every generation has had those.
Sure.
And they've always argued, oh, it's socialism and all these kinds of things, starting way back in the 1930s. But the American people have always rejected that view. They see the value of Social Security, the importance of it. So starting in the late 70s, early 80s, right around the time of the Greenspan Commission, those people either disappeared, but I think more likely changed their tactics and started saying, oh, Social Security is a wonderful program, but we can't afford it. We've got too many, you know, the baby boom is going to destroy it. We're putting a burden on our grandchildren. I mean, all those kinds of things, which are just not right when you look at read the trustees report and look at the facts. But they have managed to convince a lot of people that the program just won't be there in the future, and they've convinced, unfortunately, a lot of our policy leaders and opinion leaders who should know better.
Well, I wondered, and I don't know this for a fact, but I know senators, when he was a senator, Mr. Simpson was in the Senate for three terms, 18 years, and then before that he had been governor of Wyoming for, I don't know, two, four, six, I don't know how many years, but a good deal of his working career was spent outside Social Security.
That's right. Well, there are a number of things about it. He is not just hostile to Social Security. He seems to be hostile to seniors. I mean, he's one of those who referred to people as greedy geezers and not caring about their grandchildren, which is certainly not true of the grandparents and older people I know. And you're right that the irony of him talking about Social Security being a milk cow that everybody's sucking is that here's a guy who spent a lot of his life getting federal salary and is now getting a very comfortable government pension, so which I don't begrudge him. I don't begrudge anyone who's worked hard and contributed. And
if you earn it, you get it.
Right? If you earn it, you get it. But I don't know why he's seems to have a vendetta against ordinary Americans who have also contributed. And quite frankly, the average benefit in Social Security is, for all beneficiaries, is less than $13,000 a year. So this is not people getting a lot of money. It's a very small amount, and yet two-thirds of seniors rely on Social Security for half or more of their income.
I think that's one thing that irritates a lot of people who have worked hard and saved and maybe bought a Chevy Nova rather than a Cadillac.
Yes.
Is that they, some people assume or let Social Security be their entire retirement package, and it was never intended for that.
Well, but you're right about that. But the problem is that for immediate but very uncertain kinds of things like dying prematurely, leaving children, and having a disabling accident, getting hit by a car or something and losing your job, it's very hard to save for that. It's also very hard to save when you're in your 20s and 30s and you've got college bills to pay back and you're trying to start a family and so forth, to save for something far off like retirement. And nobody knows how long they're going to live. The value of Social Security is it's insurance, and you cannot outlive it. You can outlive your savings, but not your insurance. And go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I remember back when they were the IRS was dealing with, and they finally abolished something called the three-year rule, and it involved taxes, and it also involved civil service retirement benefits. And what they were saying is, once you retired, you got back, if you will, and it was tax-free, all of the money you had contributed to the civil service fund or whatever. And then after that, then you paid taxes on the full amount. And what they discovered was that on average, people under Social Security or people under the civil service retirement system got back all of the money they had paid in within 18 months of retirement.
And, you know, the decision was made very early on, and actually in the beginning, that people close to retirement should be, in essence, grandfathered in, that meaningful benefits should be paid to people close to retirement. And it is true that it's a very efficient system. It returns more than 99 cents of every dollar collected, and that people historically have gotten their contributions back pretty fast. I mean, they've also got the employer share as well. But that's something that's why we have these actuarial projections that go out 75 years, and that's why we're paying 6.2% of the covered earnings into the trust fund, and why they're invested conservatively. All of that is taken into account to make sure that the system is fair and it works. It's a system that is widely supported. As I say, it does not pay generous benefits to anyone. It, in recognition that lower income people have less discretionary income, it returns a larger, or it provides a proportionately larger amount of their pre-retirement income. Their
That's
wages.
What some people call the welfare tilt, I believe.
It's, but it's not.
Right. Can we, let me take one short break here, and I'd like to get to some of the emails we got as a result of the column announcing you would be on today. So we'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Down, don't be a side fake. Rolls to left. Slips ahead. Tradition never graduates. See the Navy football home opener versus Georgia Southern Saturday, September 11th at 3:30, sponsored by BB&T. And don't miss out on the Navy Fest Crab Feast. Tickets are on sale now. Enjoy all-you-can-eat crabs, 2 full hours of pregame tailgating, and a great view of the March Autumn Midshipmen. Get the best seats now by calling 1-800-US-4-NAVY or by logging on to NavySports.com. Order today and join us at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium for a game day atmosphere like no other. Get the full Annapolis experience and see quarterback Ricky Dobbs lead the Midshipmen as they take on Georgia Southern September 11th at 3:30, sponsored by BB&T. Don't miss out on all the action and come early for the Navy Fest Crab Feast. It's Navy football where tradition never graduates. Order your tickets today. Call 1-800-US-4-NAVY or visit NavySports.com.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Hey, Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Nancy Altman. She is an expert on all things Social Security and a staunch advocate in preserving it and protecting it. And we've been batting that around a little bit. Go to the email here, because in today's column, in my column, I mentioned that Nancy would be on some of the issues we were going to be discussing, and we've got a very nice response. Really smart people out there. Thank you. This is from Pete, and he doesn't list his agency, but he says, I'm a few years away from retirement under the Civil Service Retirement System Offset Program. By the way, many people think that's the best. I'm supposed to receive a CSRS defined benefit pension, with CRS making up the difference between Social Security benefit and the amount of the Civil Service pension. If Social Security benefits are cut, will CSRS make up that additional shortfall as well, so that I lose none of my pension? And I'm not sure you can answer that, but Nancy, but that's the kind of question people are asking. You know, well, what's in it for me?
Well, let me focus on what the current debate and what's going on with Social Security,
mm-hmm.
Because there is, you know, an austerity budget focus these days, and there is this deficit commission that has been set up, headed by Alan Simpson, who we spoke about earlier, and Erskine Bowles, former chief of staff to President Clinton. They are considering a number of things which I think are quite ill-advised. Raising the retirement age. For every increase in the retirement age, it constitutes a 6-7% across-the-board benefit cut, even if you retire at age 70. Thing they're talking about is changing the cost of living adjustment to make it less generous. My concern is that seniors already have extremely high costs over and above the normal cost of living adjustment because of the very rapidly rising healthcare costs and the disproportionate amount they pay for that. And there are more radical proposals to scale, to really transform the program. Social Security is a foundation both for the federal government, for the three-quarters of state and local workers that participate in Social Security, and for virtually the entire private sector. If Social Security is cut back, no matter what is done on the other side, Social Security will be the retirement income in this country, which is already inadequate, will become more so. We should be talking about expanding Social Security and making sure that these programs that are built on top of it, although I understand CSRS is someone who's not part of, is still has some benefits before, but in any event, we should be focused on ensuring that so many Americans who have lost home equity, who've lost 401k plans and other savings, have lost stock investments and so forth, that we've got to make sure that the Social Security guarantee remains.
So many people have such strong feelings about Social Security. Here's one from, I won't read all of it, but from Teresa. She retired from the IRS, and she said she worked for the government for 25 years, and then she worked under the private sector for, looks like, 25 years. And she said what irks her is going into the Social Security office in, this happens to be in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and she said the people there are nearly all obviously immigrants, and they're not putting any money into the system, and yet somehow they're going to collect from it. Is that possible? Is that
no? I think there may be confusion. The Social Security is an earned right. You have to earn 40 quarters to be fully insured. You cannot collect if you're. I mean, if you're a child, if you're a dependent of a worker, it's a family protection program. But it has to be based on. There has to be a worker who's paid in. Now, also administered by the Social Security Administration is the Supplemental Security Income Program, SSI. The names are similar, and so people confuse them, and they are companion programs. But SSI is a means-tested welfare program for those who are aged, blind, disabled. So it may be that that's where the confusion is, that there is a welfare program for people who have not contributed or who, whether they've contributed or not, because Social Security is an earned right. But the aged, blind, and disabled, if they're low enough income with low enough assets, it's very, very low level of benefits right. Can come in.
So you do have to get normal benefits, to get regular benefits, you must pay into Social Security the prescribed amount. 40 quarters, which is about, what, 10 years?
Exactly.
Okay, I think people are confused because it says get a full benefit. It means they get the full benefit for 40 quarters, what, for the time they put in, but they don't get the maximum benefit. Big difference.
No, for example, the if you become disabled, you know, you might not have worked 10 years. You might have, so there's a different insurance test for disability and survivors. To be fully insured for all benefits for disability, life insurance, disability insurance, and joint survivor annuities, you have to have worked. That vests you in your benefit, if you use private sector pension parlance. But you're correct. Then once you go in, you have to look at your earnings record. The benefit is earnings related. You have to look at what age you were when you came in to collect benefits. You can start collecting as early as 62, but you get a reduced amount if you go in at 62. You get more if you wait till after the statutory retirement age, which is currently 66.
You mentioned earlier, I think, that the average Social Security benefit was $13,000 a year. Is that right?
It's $13,000 for all beneficiaries, including those one out of three beneficiaries is not a senior, is somebody receiving disability or survivor's benefits.
Okay.
$14,000, it's only slightly more for retirement benefits.
Okay.
So around $13,000, $14,000 is an average benefit.
Do you know what the maximum benefit and the minimum benefit is?
You know, I don't know offhand. It's, the benefits are scaled so that I'm not sure that, I mean, there is a special minimum that brings you up to date, but you can imagine that if 13,000 or 14,000 is average, it's also around the median benefit. There are not, you know, it may be up to 2,000. It depends if you have a spouse, because there's a spousal benefit and so forth.
I think a lot of federal workers confuse it with the civil service system, which has the benefit is based on your salary and your high 3 years, whereas Social Security has a limit. But they're giving us a signal again here. Can we take a break and we'll be right back?
Absolutely.
More to the mailbag. Be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
My name is Haley Wong. My worst fears came when they told me that I had dengue fever.
Dengue fever ravages 50 million people in the developing world each year. There is no cure.
You literally feel the pain right in your bones. My fever was always roller coastering. I don't wish it even on my worst enemy.
Diseases like dengue fever are often neglected because they're confined to the developing world.
I stayed in the hospital for nearly a month just to get my body back. to normal again. I just felt like I was just dead.
Over 100 Novartis researchers are working on neglected diseases at their nonprofit research center in Singapore. They're getting closer to a cure for dengue fever.
If there was a cure for dengue fever, people would be very relieved.
Novartis. Think what's possible.
Hi, this is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Tuesday, September 14th at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. Our program this month will focus on secure information sharing. The panel includes government leaders from DHS, OSD, and Fairfax County government. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum Tuesday, September 14th at noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by HP, CA Technologies, and Data Guys.
If you can't communicate effectively, you can't get the job done. That's why government agencies turn to Avaya Government Solutions and Verizon. Unified communication solutions from Avaya and Verizon increase employee productivity, improve customer service, and cut costs by integrating multiple forms of communications across multi-vendor networks. Faster, more efficient, at a lower cost. The future of unified communications has arrived. Learn more at avayagov.com/GSA2010.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community, sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to Fed Talk at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week, host Bill Bransford will be joined by the Partnership for Public Service, discussing the release of the 2010 Best Places to Work survey and the upcoming SAMMY Awards.
Department of Homeland Security CIO Richard Spires will discuss the department's $6.4 billion IT investment and a status update on major contracts within the department at a breakfast event hosted by INPUT, the Authority on Government Business, on October 5th at the Ritz-Carlton in McLean, Virginia. John Sly, principal analyst for INPUT, will also identify major technology investments within the department. To register, go to dhsbreakfast.input.com or call INPUT Events at 703-707-3698.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey talking with Nancy Altman, an expert on Social Security and an advocate of the system and preserving and protecting it. It's a couple of good emails I'd like to kind of finish up with here. One of them from Kelly. She says, I agree Social Security needs a big overhaul like Medicare. It's not the government's responsibility to take care of the people. It's our responsibility to take care of ourselves instead of buying expensive cars, houses, and that sort of thing. We rely on putting money away for retirement. Said, I didn't have a choice when I started working. My father said, sat me down and said, you'll put money away for retirement, period. I'm so glad I listened, but I couldn't afford that new car I wanted. I've been paying for into Social Security for 25 years and was wondering, is there a possibility of getting any of the money I paid into the system when I retire, or should I save more because it won't be there? And this is a frequent thing you hear from particularly younger people, is that it won't be there when I'm ready to retire.
Yes, and this is really so unfortunate that people think that, because part of what Social Security is supposed to provide is a sense of peace of mind. It's security. And the trustees' reports, which come out every single year, say that that even if Congress were to do nothing, most of the funding is coming in from current contributions of workers and their employers. So there will always be most of the benefit that are paid. After 2037, you'd be able to pay 78 cents on the dollar, which, as I say, is not good enough, but is important. I think Kelly asks a very good question. It's valuable to save. It's important to save. But historically, people, even the hardest working people, can find it very hard to save. If you become unemployed, you lose your wages. If you have a disabling accident, if you have current expenses for college and so forth, it becomes very hard to save. It is not the government imposing this on us. As Franklin Roosevelt described it, it was all of us together using the government as an instrumentality to let us all together pay in when we were working so we could draw out as if we lost our wages, wage insurance in the event of death, disability, or old age. And it still works today.
It was interesting. Some years ago, George Will, a columnist, sort of answered that question about young people, the boomers and younger, who were saying, I'm not going to have what my parents had when I retire. And he said, you're exactly right. You're not going to have what your parents had. He said, if you want to have what your parents had, get rid of all your cars but one, or maybe don't have one. Go back to having one bathroom for a family of five or six, and you know, on and on and on. And he wasn't even talking about high tech gizmos, but he was just talking about our expanded idea of what the middle class should have and should be. So that's a difference too. Got one here from, I love this name, John C. I've only known one other in my life, and she says, "I am a civil service offset." As one of the earlier emailers had said, I have contributed to the Thrift Savings Plan since 1984. I'm currently at a 7% deduction. In 2011, I'll have 39 years of federal service. Any suggestions? Well, I would say two things. One, the Civil Service Offset Program, it covers about 20 or 30,000 people. It's between the FERS program and the Civil Service Retirement System. Many people consider it the best in the business, and they've gone to great lengths to get into it. But just looking at what she said, my suggestion to her would be, if you don't dislocate your arm, but pat yourself on the back, you've done everything right, she's going to get Social Security. She will get a civil service benefit. And since she's been kicking into the TSPs, life should be good for her.
And let me just add one quick thing, and that is that to ensure that you get Social Security, it's not an economics matter. We can afford this program. But the politicians and opinion leaders and conservatives are out to cut it back. So if you want to make sure, I would join the political fight. We have a website, strengthensocialsecurity.org. Go to our website and check it out.
Okay, so you don't believe there are greedy geezers out there, huh?
No. I absolutely do not. I think we are a country of extremely hardworking people.
Okay. And what do you think, what would be your guess is going to come out of this lame duck session and the Debt Reduction Commission?
Well, I'm hoping that it will focus where the focus should be, that Social Security, as I said, cannot borrow and does not contribute to the deficit. What's caused the deficit in the short term have been two wars on a credit card, have been tax cuts, have been the economy that crashed as a result of Wall Street excess and deregulation. And in the long term, we've got healthcare costs that we've made a step with this bill, but are still projected to rise very rapidly. So I would hope that the Deficit Commission and Congress and the President focus where the trouble is.
All right, Wade, we'll have you back in a couple months to see how things went. Thank you very much, Nancy Altman. Thanks for listening. Remember, the show is archived on our homepage, so if you couldn't listen to it or all of it, or you want to hear it again, it's there. And we'll see you this same time next Wednesday. Have a good week.
Cisco is the official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for data center, security, and unified communication strategy and solutions.
If you work for or have worked for the federal government, I want to tell you about an organization that's been around for over 80 years. It's NARF. Organized in 1921 to protect and enhance the retirement and health benefits of federal employees. NARF wants you to know that laws can change, and so can your retirement security. Protect it by joining NARF, the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. That's www.narfe.org. Or call 1-800-627-3394 and ask them to send you some information. Join now. NARF, your best retirement investment.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano?